This is Samuel Blumenfeld, author of Alpha Phonics. Many of you who are about to use Alpha Phonics to teach your children to read were yourselves never taught intensive phonics in school. You've probably heard a lot about phonics, but you're not sure what it is. So let me explain what phonics is all about, how it is taught in Alpha Phonics, and how you can teach it to a child, a reading disabled adolescent, or a functionally illiterate adult. Incidentally, if you yourself never had phonics instruction, this course will help improve your own reading. You were probably taught to read by the Dick and Jane method, that is, the look, say, whole word, or sight method. Most adults in America were taught that way. You were taught a sight vocabulary, that is, to look at our written English words as whole configurations or symbols of meaning, little pictures like Chinese ideographs. You were taught configuration clues, picture clues, context clues, and even phonetic clues. Phonetic clues is not true phonics. It is simply a way of reducing guessing errors by teaching a pupil initial consonant letter sounds. In all, you were taught to look at written English words as Chinese ideographs. But ours is an alphabetic writing system, not an ideographic one like Chinese. Our written words are composed of letters which are symbols for sounds. And unless you know our sound symbol system, that is, our alphabetic system, you will not only have difficulty becoming a proficient reader, but you will find reading tedious and unenjoyable. Perhaps the best way to convey to you the important difference between ideographic writing and alphabetic writing is to give you a short, quick history of how our writing system developed. The earliest form of writing is known as pictography. The early cavemen drew pictures on the walls of their caves, usually a battle or a hunting scene. In these drawings, human beings look like human beings, animals look like animals, weapons look like weapons. In other words, in pictography, the graphic symbols look like the things they represent. You didn't have to go to school to learn how to read pictographs. But as civilization became more complex, the scribes had to begin depicting things that did not lend themselves to depiction. For example, it is easy enough to draw pictures of objects, but how do you draw pictures of ideas and concepts? How do you draw pictures of such concepts as good and evil, right and wrong, or system, method, belief? How do you draw a picture of a concept such as determine? You can't. So what you do is draw a picture, a graphic symbol, and tell people, this symbol stands for determine. It doesn't look like determine, but it's determine. We call that kind of symbol an ideograph. The scribes created thousands and thousands of ideographs, none of which looked like the ideas they represented. And now you did have to go to school to learn to read. Someone had to tell you what all of these ideographs meant. And it wasn't easy learning the meanings of thousands of these strange-looking configurations. The result is that literacy was confined to a small body of scribes, scholars, and priests who devoted their lives to mastering ideographic writing and reading. As ideographic writing became more and more complex, the need for a simpler writing system became obvious. The answer to that need came somewhere between 2000 and 1500 BC, when someone, presumably a Phoenician living in the area of what is now southern Lebanon or northern Israel, made a remarkable discovery, one of the most remarkable discoveries in all of human history. He discovered that all of human language, everything we say, is composed of a small number of irreducible speech sounds, and he proceeded to invent a writing system based on that discovery. He thought, instead of using a writing system comprised of thousands of graphic symbols, none of which looked like the things they were supposed to represent, why not create a set of written symbols to stand for the irreducible speech sounds of the language? In that way, we would have an easy means of transcribing the spoken word directly into written form and an equally easy way of translating the written word back into its spoken form. And thus alphabetic writing was invented. All alphabets are based on this same principle. The Greek alphabet stands for the sounds of the Greek language. The Russian alphabet stands for the sounds of Russian. The Hebrew alphabet stands for the sounds of Hebrew. And the English alphabet stands for the sounds of English. Incidentally, the word alphabet comes from the names of the first two letters of the Greek alphabet, Alpha and Beta. Now, as I've said, all of human language is composed of a small number of irreducible speech sounds. How many irreducible speech sounds do you think there are in English? No, not 26. There are actually 44 sounds in the English language. Then why do we have a 26-letter alphabet, you might ask? Why don't we have a 44-letter alphabet? These are perfectly good questions. Well, this is what happened. When the Romans conquered the British Islands, they imposed the Latin alphabet on the people who lived there, and the local scribes adapted it to their language. The result is something of a mismatch. After all, if you are going to use 26 letters to stand for 44 sounds, you are going to have to make some accommodations. Thus, some of our letters stand for more than one sound, and some of our sounds are represented by more than one letter. For example, our typically English consonant sound is represented by TH. The sound SH is represented by SH, and CH is represented by CH. The letter A stands for at least four different vowel sounds. Long A, as in April or apron, the short A, or A, as in cat or bat. It stands for the R sound, as in car or father, and it stands for the OR sound, as in ball, fall, tall, etc. Now, how does a child know which sound is called for when he sees the letter A in a word? Well, in an intensive systematic phonics program, he is taught the letter sounds in their spelling families. And that's how we do it in alpha phonics. Now, how do you teach a child to read an alphabetic writing system? For hundreds of years, it was done in the simplest, most mechanical way. First, the child was taught to recognize the letters of the alphabet. This was easily done with the alphabet song or blocks or other devices. The second step was to teach the child the sounds the letters stand for. This was done through rote drill. The child was first taught the sounds of the consonant letters, which were then joined with vowel letters. The child was then drilled in those consonant-vowel combinations in column form, such as day, be, by, bo, bu, day, de, di, do, du, ba, ba, bi, ba, bu, da, da, di, da, da, etc. The purpose of the drill was to make sure that the child developed an automatic association between letters and sounds, so that when the child sees the letters, he will automatically say the sounds. Developing this automatic association is the essential task in mastering an alphabetic writing system. When that task was completed, the child was then given words, sentences, and little stories which he was expected to sound out. Alpha phonics is a modern variant of that centuries-old method of instruction which produced such good readers in days gone by. I have actually simplified the method even further, taking into account the special aspects of our alphabetic system. Unlike some alphabets, which are completely regular and consistent, the English alphabet is somewhat complex. However, the English alphabetic system is not nearly as irregular or inconsistent as some people say it is. Our consonant letters are almost totally regular. It is our vowels that pose a problem. English is rich in its range of vowel sounds. We have as many as 20 vowel sounds, but only 6 vowel letters, A, E, I, O, U, and Y. Y, of course, doubles as both a consonant and a vowel. Some people say that because of this, English spelling or orthography is a mess. Again, it is not nearly as difficult or messy as some people think. The problem is that many people simply do not take the time or make the effort to learn our spelling system. English is a rich language which has incorporated many foreign words and spellings. It is a constantly growing language, adding new words all the time. Also, pronunciations and regional accents have changed over the centuries, but not the spellings, and therefore we have a lot of archaic spellings. Some people have proposed simplifying our spelling by getting rid of all these archaic, eccentric spellings. They want written English to be totally regular and phonetic in its spelling forms. Now, this may be a laudable goal, but if we did that, then all of the tradition and history and etymology that is contained in our spelling would be lost. I think it is worth the extra effort in learning our alphabetic system to keep that tremendous depository of information about the origins and history of our language intact. In any case, learning to read English is not difficult. Children have been doing it successfully for centuries. And the reason why so many children in our schools today have so much trouble learning to read is because of the faulty teaching methods used. Back in the days when alphabetic phonics was the prevalent method of teaching, virtually every child learned to read. We must remember that the invention of the alphabet not only made ideographic writing obsolete, it permitted a tremendous expansion of vocabulary, because now there was a writing system that could easily accommodate new words and new ideas. Alphabetic writing made it easy for the multitude to become literate, instead of having to remember the configurations of thousands of ideographs. All one had to do was learn the sounds of a small number of letters. And so we must regard the alphabet with great awe, respect, and even love. It permitted human beings to do so much more with so much less. It is civilization's prized possession. It stands to reason that a thorough knowledge and understanding of the English alphabetic system will enable a pupil not only to read well, but also to spell well. We often forget that our writing system is a two-way process, to be used both for reading and writing, decoding and encoding. And a pupil must become proficient in both in order to be truly literate. Knowledge alone, however, does not lead to reading fluency. To gain fluency requires all of the techniques used in developing a skill to the point where it seems effortless: practice, frequent use, drill, review, etc. Alphaphonics makes full use of all of these proven techniques of learning. Moreover, it teaches in a logical, systematic way facts about our alphabetic system which are usually taught rather haphazardly, if at all. And it makes these facts operating knowledge for the student who wishes to learn to spell accurately and enlarge his or her vocabulary. Our alphabetic system. The English alphabetic system may be complex, but it can be taught and it ought to be taught. We have an alphabetic system of great range and flexibility. Our spellings reveal much about the history and development of our language. And once the eccentricities of the system are learned, they are learned. They do not change. The reward for learning this system is to have for one's personal use and enrichment the entire body of our published literature. Such a literary treasure is indeed the priceless inheritance of everyone who can read. Our English alphabetic system is complex for a variety of reasons. One, it uses 26 letters to stand for 44 sounds. Two, it uses 5 vowel letters to stand for 21 vowel sounds. Three, many consonant letters stand for more than one sound. Four, some sounds, particularly the long vowel sounds, are represented by more than one spelling. Five, the invasions of foreign languages have enriched English but complicated its spellings. 6. Pronunciations have changed over the centuries, but the spellings have not, creating many irregularities. Despite all of this, our system is more than 85% consistent or regular, with most of the irregularities consisting of variant vowel spellings. In devising this instruction program, we have taken all of the above into account. Therefore, we start out by teaching the pupil the short vowels, which are the most regular in spelling, in conjunction with the consonants. Then we teach the consonant blends, final blends first, then the initial blends. Last, we teach the long vowels in their great variety of spelling forms. Thus, we proceed from the simple to the complex in easy stages, giving the pupil plenty of practice and drill along the way. The pupil learns to read and spell in an orderly, systematic, logical way, as well as to pronounce the language with greater accuracy. It should be pointed out that phonics instruction helps in the development of a good diction. To some teachers, this will seem like an overly academic way to teach reading, and it is, on purpose, because we want the pupil to learn to enjoy using his or her mind. Teaching the alphabet. The fastest and most efficient way to teach the alphabet is to have the child repeat it after you in alphabetical order while you point to the letters. Thus, the child learns the alphabet both orally and visually at the same time. Usually, the oral learning will be faster than the visual, since the oral alphabet, when repeated often enough, is learned almost like a melody or a poem. The alphabet lends itself easily to this kind of learning, since it can be broken up into rhythmical and rhyming lines as follows: A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O, P, Q, R, S, T, U, V, W, X, Y, Z. It will take some time before the child's visual learning catches up with his or her oral knowledge. Indeed, some children learn to recite the alphabet perfectly long before they are able to identify all of the letters at random. This is perfectly normal, since the child has had much oral practice learning to speak the language. However, now he or she is required to do highly precise visual learning, which may take some getting used to, especially if the child has had little exposure to print. Children with photographic memories will learn visually much faster than those not so favorably endowed. The slowest learners will be those with weak visual memories. These children will benefit most from simple alphabetic exercises, such as repeating the letters at random several at a time, as in the pre-reading alphabet exercises on page 159 of Alpha Phonics. Both oral and visual learning of the alphabet should be accompanied by kinesthetic learning, that is, by having the pupil draw the letters in both capital and lowercase forms. Drawing the letters will help the child learn their different shapes more thoroughly. A lined notebook should be used by the pupil for doing this work. Another effective way for the child to learn to identify letters at random is to ask him or her to pick out specific letters from advertisements in newspapers and magazines. In this way, the pupil learns to recognize the letters in different sizes and typefaces. This is also a good way to check on the child's vision. Pictures are not necessary in teaching the alphabet if you do it in the systematic manner prescribed in this program. The picture the child should be looking at is the letter itself, not an apple or a bumblebee or an elephant. Pictures are a distraction that can only delay learning the alphabet directly as a set of graphic symbols. We make this point because shortly after the letters are learned, the pupil will be taught to associate them with speech sounds, and this is very crucial. A letter is a symbol of a sound. It is not the symbol of anything else. The letter is supposed to stimulate the mouth, lips, and tongue to make particular sounds. It is not supposed to make the pupil think of an apple or an elephant. He or she must translate groups of letters into speech, and the pupil will be able to do this more readily the better he or she associates the letters with sounds. A word of caution. When a pupil is having uncommon difficulty learning or mastering any phase of the instruction, do not become impatient and do not scold. Analyze and try to pinpoint the cause of the difficulty. You may simply have to take more time than you thought necessary. Some students take a year to master what others can master in a month. Remember, the goal is not to win a race, but to teach a person to read, no matter how much time it takes to do the job well. Teaching the letter sounds. Assuming that the pupil has learned the alphabet, we are now ready to teach the letter sounds. The pupil's knowledge of the alphabet does not have to be letter perfect before we move on to this next phase, for the simple reason that the student will learn the letters better as they are used. When you are ready to teach the letter sounds, you might explain to the student something about how and why the alphabet was invented. Older students are usually quite fascinated to learn that the entire English language is made up of only 44 irreducible speech sounds. Try, if possible, to appeal to the learner's intellectual curiosity. You never know what kind of a response you will get. Pupils are very sensitive about their ability to learn. This is particularly true of remedial students whose self-esteem has been badly battered by failure. A learning block or handicap is not a reflection of basic intelligence. We all know of highly intelligent people who have trouble doing simple arithmetic. We also know that many so-called dyslexics are very bright and articulate. Therefore, always appeal to a pupil's basic intelligence. When teaching younger pupils the letter sounds, you might simply say, "Now we are going to learn the sounds the letters stand for, so that you can put the letters to work for you. Each letter stands for a different sound. You will be able to read words by knowing the sounds the letters stand for." The essence of what you want to convey to the pupil is that letters have meaning. They stand for sounds, and that the letters in a written word tell the reader how to say it. In teaching the letter sounds, it is important to convey the idea that the distinct sounds of our language can be isolated and represented by written symbols. Obviously, the alphabet was invented by someone who spoke clearly and heard clearly and could distinguish between the fine differences of speech sounds, between the T and the D, between S and Z, M and N, short A and short E. But a pupil's attunement to speech sounds may not be very sharp. In fact, some pupils may articulate very poorly and require a good deal of work to improve their pronunciations. Therefore, spend as much time as is needed to sharpen your pupil's attunement to the isolated, irreducible speech sounds of our language as you teach the letter sounds. Be sure to pronounce all words clearly. The alphabet is a tremendously exciting invention based on a great discovery, that all of human language is composed of a small number of irreducible speech sounds. In teaching the alphabet, you can convey to your pupil the excitement of this great discovery and the marvelous invention based on it. You say, "Did you know that every word you speak can be put down on paper? That's pretty exciting. And that's what you are going to learn to do, to put down on paper every sound of speech you make." Thus, you've established the concept of a set of written symbols representing speech sounds. This is the association you want to establish in the pupil's mind, that letters on paper stand for sounds that he can make with his voice, and that the sounds he makes can be put down on paper by way of letters representing them. Some practical suggestions. This book has been designed to be used as both a tutoring and a classroom text. If the classroom teacher has only one copy of Alphaphonics, then the pupils should be provided with lined notebooks in which to copy lessons from the board. Ideally, each pupil should have his own copy of Alphaphonics, plus a notebook in order to facilitate the assignment of homework. This would also reduce the need for time-consuming board work by the teacher and costly duplicating. Tutored pupils should also, whenever possible, have their own copies of Alphaphonics for homework and reference use. The pupil should also have a lined notebook for practicing cursive writing, for spelling exercises, vocabulary lists, and sentence writing. It is advisable to assign some written homework after each tutoring session. The purpose of homework is to speed up the acquisition, retention, and improvement of skills. The amount of homework should depend on the amount of time between sessions. Although the lesson instructions have been written from a classroom viewpoint, a tutor will find them easily adaptable for one-on-one teaching. Simply substitute pupil for class, and that's what I will be doing in this recording. Cursive writing. Now that you are about to teach the pupil the letter sounds, that is to read, you should also start teaching the pupil to write in cursive. In other words, writing in cursive should be taught in conjunction with reading. There is no need to spend a year or two forcing a child to perfect his or her print script, or manuscript as it is called, before switching to cursive. Actually, cursive is easier to learn than ball and stick print script. In addition, if a child is forced to perfect print script in the first 2 years of formal learning, he or she will develop habits of holding the pen and printing the words in ways that may make it impossible to develop a good cursive handwriting later on. Back in the days when I attended primary school in the early 1930s, everyone learned cursive in the first grade. No one was taught to print as handwriting. Printing was taught years later in art class for poster making. It was never taught as handwriting. Cursive is quite easy. There are only three movements in all of cursive: the undercurve, the overcurve, and the up and down. The undercurve and overcurve are merely the two halves of an oval. Cursive is easier than print script because less muscular effort is needed. It is also a faster and less tiring form of writing. Also, the end of one letter tells you how to begin the next. In short, cursive is easier to learn than print script. Besides, if you can write cursive, you will be able to read someone else's cursive as well. The development of good penmanship should be an integral part of your primary program. On page 158 of Alphaphonics, you will find a sample cursive alphabet. My book, How to Tutor, has a complete section on cursive writing instruction. I suggest that you get a copy of the book and use it in conjunction with Alphaphonics. It is important to help your child learn to write correctly from the very beginning, for it is far easier to inculcate a good habit than it is to break a bad one. Teach the child how to hold the pen correctly, how to tilt the paper correctly, and how to form the letters correctly. Children want to know how to do these things correctly because they want to master whatever it is they are learning. They want to succeed. Always instruct in a kindly, soft-spoken, direct way. Above all, always be patient. It is always possible that your instruction is not clear or easy to understand. You cannot teach something which you yourself don't know. If you have any doubts about how to teach something, consult with an expert. Get sound guidance. If you would like my advice, simply write to the publisher of Alphaphonics, the Paradigm Company, whose address is on the copyright page of the book.